Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. I'm him. The website is scotthorton.org. You can find all the archives there, more than 4,000 of them now, going back to 2003 at scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there as well. Help support at scotthorton.org/donate. I still got that deal going on. Anybody who donates $50 or more to help support the show, you get the brand new book of long-lost Rothbard essays, Never a Dull Moment. Find out about that at scotthorton.org/donate. And, hey, follow me on Twitter if you want to be insulted. At Scott Horton Show. Okay, introducing our good friend Jared LaBelle, Executive Director of the Taxpayers United of America. Welcome back to the show, Jared. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
Good, man. Good to have you here. And I love reading this article, too, because, you know, hey, it's August, so lots of people are writing about nuking Japanese folks. But this is the best one I've read this season anyway. Mr. Truman. Or How I Learned to Start Worrying and Hate the Bomb. So there you go again, Taxpayers United of America. This great article is to run on Tuesday at antiwar.com. We're recording this Monday night, but this will run on Nagasaki Day on antiwar.com. And it starts out with Hiroshima, as the nuclear age did, with the Enola Gay. And Colonel Paul Tibbetts. So why don't you start with that? Tell us about him and his role in this thing.
Sure. Well, I enjoyed pointing out the horrifying fact that he named his plane after his mother, Enola Gay Tibbetts.
Mm-hmm.
How awful. I mean, incredibly terrible, considering the amount of people he incinerated with that device and the bomb he deployed. So absolutely horrifying to start with. The bomb itself exploded over Hiroshima with approximately 15 kilotons of TNT. So an immense force. And up until his death in 2007, Colonel Tibbetts dismissed any criticism as hogwash. He was not at all sorry for what he did. He thought it was a noble act, which I can't imagine anyone holding those thoughts in their head. Absolutely horrifying.
Hey, it's either that or admit he was wrong, right?
Absolutely. And that means he has, tens of thousands of deaths on his hands. And, that might be too much for his conscience.
Yeah. All right. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, so 16 hours, though, after the bombing, President Truman, who was already made well aware of the civilian death toll as well as the somewhat small military deaths that were within Hiroshima, Greg Mitchell has done a fantastic job talking about these issues in multiple books, and I believe his blog is Pressing Issues, where every lead up to Hiroshima and Nagasaki Day, he recounts facts that Americans are unaware of regarding the bombings. And so Truman was well aware of how horrifying this attack was, and in his public statement, he said, "We've spent $2 billion on the greatest scientific gamble in history, and won." And he went on to say, "What has been done is the greatest achievement of organized science in history. It was done under high pressure and without failure, like a true progressive, you know, in the vein of, you know, your FDRs and Woodrow Wilson. He was a monster."
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you could see the scientific achievement of it in a vacuum, you know. But, yeah, we're talking about attacking a massive civilian target there. And it's interesting, you know, I guess it sort of goes without saying that FDR would have done the same thing, or if it had been a Republican in the same chair or whatever. And yet it does seem kind of unique, the story. It makes it, well, depending on who you read about this, I guess, it makes sometimes the consensus seems rather small. Like maybe it was just Truman and the his Secretary of State, Burns, that it was really just Truman and Burns who really wanted to do it. Maybe Stimson, the Secretary of Defense, went along. I don't really know, but it sort of depending on who's telling the story, it sort of makes it sound like maybe it didn't really have to happen at all, or maybe someone else in the same position might have decided to nuke an empty valley a couple valleys over from Tokyo as a demonstration or something like that. I mean, you look at the map, and Hiroshima and Nagasaki are so far from Tokyo, it would have taken them forever to even find out exactly what had happened anyway, you know?
Yeah, there's a whole long line of military leaders who said that these attacks were unnecessary. Even Dwight D. Eisenhower, you know, that commie, he you know, the leader of the U.S. military during World War II, he thought it was an awful, awful thing to have dropped the bomb. And I believe Nimitz as well said things along those lines, if not publicly, I know in private letters. Admiral Leahy, the president's chief of staff, said similar things. Let me see. I have
MacArthur too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Leahy said specifically, the use of this barbarous weapon at Hiroshima and Nagasaki was of no material assistance in our war against Japan. The Japanese were already defeated and ready to surrender. And of course, for those history buffs out there, they know that the USSR was getting ready to get into this mass slaughter as well. So. There were numerous reasons, which I don't necessarily go into in the article, but I reference other articles that I highly recommend to your listeners, specifically the one by Anthony Gregory from the Independent Institute, which is just fantastic in its horror, called Hiroshima, Nagasaki in the U.S. Terror State. He really lays out the case very well that this was unnecessary to be done.
Right. And now, you know, I wanted to bring this up. I'm glad I just thought of it. Someone that I was talking with, I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, I'd name him, but a friend I was talking with just a few weeks ago was telling me about, I think it's like a vendor that comes by his work semi-regularly, something like that, and is a typical kind of, you know, right-wing talk radio tough guy because he drives for a living, so he listens to talk radio all day, so he's a kind of a ditto head or whatever. And so they got in an argument about nuking Japan. And this guy was just pure party line that, hey, USA, USA, the guy's name is True Man. How can you argue with that? You know, blah, blah, blah. Same old kind of brainwash we all learn in fifth grade. And then my friend said to him, oh, yeah, and started naming Republicans and generals and admirals who opposed the nuking. And the guy went, wait a minute. And then he went and he looked it up online, and the next time he saw the guy, he came back, you know, pretty soon after and said, you know, I looked that up and it turns out you're right. MacArthur and Nimitz and Eisenhower and all of these guys said that it was a horrible atrocity, that it was unnecessary. Oh my goodness. And so, you know, it just goes to show that this is all social psychology, right? Like, this guy is not making this decision himself. This is all just sort of, you know, it's what we believe. And so, in a way, that's kind of why I have you on here today. I want to make sure that you cite Leahy and Nimitz and Nitze and the rest of them too. But also, I want to make sure that you have a chance to cite Anthony Gregory and Bill Kaufman and Isabel Patterson and show these people, hey, here's the guy from the you know, United Taxpayers of America explaining what us libertarians think about nuking Japan. This is what we think. We're against it, and here's why. Because that's game we're playing. It's a game of persuasion. It's not even about morality. It's a matter of whose team are you on?
Sure. And a quick, you know, Google search by the gentleman you were talking about, he would see a quote from, you know, former President Herbert Hoover. You know, again, the use of the atomic bomb with its indiscriminate killing of women and children revolts my soul. The only difference between this and the use of gas is the fear of retaliation. That's Herbert Hoover. And, you know, I'm no fan. I think the presidency is a cult. But that's exactly why it's important to cite some of these people. And so, like, for more actual heroic people, like you mentioned, Bill Kaufman wrote an absolutely fantastic book called Ain't My America, talking about the anti-imperialist tradition in American history that actually has very, you know, conservative and libertarian leanings and foundations. So this isn't really recent history, I think, would be kind of the big change up with the love of empire. I think there's a long lineage of anti-imperialist and anti-war tendencies in America that gets kind of whitewashed and cast aside by the cult of the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in government school. I mean, always in August when we're talking about the nuking, my brain is just flooded with all these memories of especially fifth grade. And I had a pretty damn good social studies teacher for fifth grade. And when we talked about A-bombing Japan, he laid it out that maybe this is arguable. Not everybody agrees that Truman did the right thing. Then again, it was America that did it, and he was the leader, and it was in the past, and this is a democracy, and most adults today think it was the right thing, and so, yeah, pretty much we do, but at least he admitted that there was a discrepancy here, and not everyone, you know, immediately signed up, or even now, maybe they argue about whether it was really necessary or not in hindsight, something like that. But, you know, if he had said, you know, one of the most respected writers of the time, Zora Neale Hurston, said that Truman was a monster, the butcher of Asia, that he was, you know, I forget if she compared him exactly to Hitler, to Tojo, or to which all enemy war criminals she compared him to. But if he had taught me, if he had taught us that, that, you know, it became possible, once the A-bombs went off, Americans really started to contemplate whether their leaders were actually no better than the enemies that they had just sacrificed everything to destroy. Wow, now that's a discrepancy.
Absolutely, and Hurston's quote is absolutely fantastic. She wrote to the founder of the Associated Negro Press in 1946, and she was very concerned, and she said exactly what you said, Truman is a monster. I can think of him as nothing else but the butcher of Asia, and she put that in all caps. That was her emphasis. She wanted to make sure that was very clear. Of his grin of triumph on giving the order to drop the atom bombs on Japan, is it that we are so devoted to a good massa that we feel that we ought not to even protest such crimes? She saw exactly what this was. It was mass murder disguised as patriotism and a good war tactic, and she didn't want any of it. Now, coming from the Harlem Renaissance, a lot of her counterparts were other African-Americans who many of them were, you know, sympathetic to the Soviet Union and some, you know, outright commies and things like that. But she was definitely one of the heroic individualists within the movement that said, I will have none of this. I will not defend it. And also along with Isabel Patterson, the writer of The God of the Machine, she said of Truman's bombings that he was employing science to fry Japanese babies in atomic radiation. And obviously not in a positive light. So these are some of the people who at the time spoke out very well to different degrees. Some of them were worried about their careers, of course, because there is such a push amongst the American public to salute whenever the government does something absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the arguments about this that really hit me was in Ralph Rako's. Essay, or I guess it's a chapter of one of his books, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's R-A-I-C-O, everybody, if you're not familiar, Ralph Rako, old Rothbardian, OG libertarian historian. And somewhere in that essay, he makes the comparison that, well, what if the Americans had just sent in the Marines to Nagasaki and had rounded up 75,000 men, women, and children and had just machine gunned them all to death in the center of town? Like the Nazi Gestapo, only bigger than any, I guess, single massacre of the Nazi Gestapo. As big anyway. Would that have been okay? Hey, yeah, we had to because we're trying to make them surrender and save lives by ending the war sooner and this kind of thing. All of a sudden, it doesn't sound as convincing. But if it's over in a flash, well, I guess, you know, and if there's nothing left but dust and maybe not even that of the people who are dead, and maybe we can just kind of pretend that what difference does it really make at this point, you know, like that. But if we were really talking about sending, you know, farm boys from Iowa as Marines to go over there and machine gun mothers and babies to death at point blank range in that SS style, this would be a different argument than flying a plane overhead and dropping one big bomb.
Yeah, flying the plane is so impersonal. You know, you don't have to actually see those people dying in front of you, who the majority that were in Hiroshima and Nagasaki were civilians, women and children and the elderly. These weren't, and that's a great point that Greg Mitchell brings up, and he's made that point in numerous essays as well as in his books, that you know, that was Truman's first big lie, was that this is just a giant military base, that's why we blew it up. Not true. not true at all. And you know, that would be something that would be found within the links of the article. I don't really delve into that because it's such a dark comedy, the whole thing, in such a you know, scary way, which I think is why Dr. Strangelove really has such power, even, you know, so many decades later. Because if you watch that film, you can totally see that's what the state is. It's not a giant conspiracy. It's stupidity back and forth all the time. And there's a couple really great articles, one in Mother Jones a while back, that has just a list of some of the accidental nukings that have almost happened, many of them in the United States. In November of 58, a B-47 had a Mark 39 hydrogen bomb crashed in Abilene, Texas. And it just happened to not detonate and trigger a nuclear blast.
Superior blends of premium coffee. Roasted fresh in Zionsville, Indiana. Darren's Coffee satisfies the casual and the connoisseur. Scott Horton Show listeners, visit darrenscoffee.com and use the coupon code SCOTT at checkout for free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Because everyone deserves to drink great coffee.
Oh, yeah, and there's plenty of those.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as, there's, you know, North Carolina or something, you had with 7 out of 8 fail safes failed and just the one held. And then, of course, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, you had a political decision made by one separate bureaucracy officer on a Soviet submarine who... It took 3 men to agree to launch the nuclear torpedo, and the captain of the sub and his first officer agreed, but the political officer said no. I mean, holy crap. And that would have been the end of us all. You had one H-bomb go off during the Cuba missile crisis off the coast of Florida anywhere, and then that would have been Moscow, and that would have been D.C., and then that would have been all the rest of us. Simple as that.
Yeah, and that's what's so horrifying about nuclear weapons as a whole, and I think it's important that libertarians especially, you know, we're always, you know, told that we're wrong, we're crazy, and that, of course, libertarians want to all own personal nuclear weapons. But, you know, Murray Rothbard makes the great point in War, Peace, and the State that you can't really strategically aim nuclear weapons, unlike bows and arrows and rifles and things like that. So it breaks libertarian tradition and principles just from the start. You're going to kill massive amounts of people.
They can't be used with discrimination, only indiscriminately.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. And not only that, the amount of money that this type of boondoggle costs, the National Priorities Project says that every hour U.S. taxpayers will pay about $2.19 million for nuclear weapons. That's already at $16.4 billion for this year alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like how you point out in the article, too, that the F-35, part of that boondoggle is that these are... You know, H-bomb delivery devices. That's what they are.
Yeah. And that's a whole nother, as you know, can of worms there. That machine is a flying dumpster fire that they just keep pouring more taxpayer dollars into. And for what reason? To prop up Lockheed Martin. Why not?
Yeah. Well, and you know, I don't know, man. It's a funny thing, kind of, the great paradox. Lots of great paradoxes in nuclear weapons. You know, they're so powerful that nobody ever uses them, at least so far, in a period of time that's really just a blink of an eye since the last time that they were used in anger. You know, so far that kind of holds. And then while at the same time, everyone really is conscious of how dangerous they are. And probably anyone who's even slightly informed about political matters in the world has some kind of ballpark estimate of, you know, a couple of 10,000 of these things exist in the world ready to be used at any given time. And yet it's such a low priority. It's the craziest thing in the world that we would let any politician with any last name have the button or the football or whatever it is and have the ability to start a nuclear war. And yet, we just kind of go on like this. Like, it's really not that big of a deal. Because after all, nobody ever uses them, do they? So what it's going to take is a full-scale nuke war between India and Pakistan for the survivors of the rest of humanity to finally get around to getting rid of these things. And that is if Hillary doesn't get us into a full-scale war with Russia, in which case there's no point in getting rid of them because we're all dead. And the only ones that are left will never be fired because there's nobody left to fire them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And of course, like, again, the big elephant in the room is who has used nuclear weapons during a war? Only the United States. As much as they want to point fingers at, you know, Iran and every other scary, you know, other than the United States country, you know, outside of the borders. Only the United States has incinerated two cities. And so, yeah, the fight between, oh, is Trump crazier or is Hillary crazier? Well, I don't trust either of them with the button.
Yeah,
ever,
or Modi.
Or anyone.
Or Putin. Or, you know,
absolutely.
Who's the Lady May? Did you see the new Hillary that's the Prime
yes,
Minister of Great Britain?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they go, the guy asks her in the Prime Minister's questions, oh, yeah, well, are you ready to use nukes? And she goes, yeah. Oh, and he even says, are you willing to use nukes against a city full of hundreds of thousands of people? And she says, yes. I mean, wow. She
government
didn't say,
is a humanitarian,
but pretty close.
Government is a humanitarian institution, obviously, very benevolent. And so, therefore, you might burn to death. It's absolutely horrifying. And again, the amount of money that's been spent on it, too, it's kind of like the floating fortress in 1984, uh-huh. You know, just go ahead and send it on out because, you know, since the use by Truman, again, haven't been used in warfare, and people can make, you know, arguments about MAD and whether or not mutual assured destruction makes sense. But in the meantime, the government's poured more than $5.8 trillion into this monstrosity. Can you imagine that? I mean, I don't want the government to really do anything or spend our money by stealing it and doing so on and so forth. But can you imagine what could have been done with that much money? I mean, it's just the opportunity cost is just so, so massive.
Yeah. Do nothing nuclear missiles. That's what Mr. Burns called them on The Simpsons. It's a waste of money just sitting there. These do nothing wars. Thank goodness. But yeah, man. And so now back to Japan, too.
Sure.
I actually haven't read the book, but Gar Alperovitz, or whatever, however you say it, wrote this big thing in the 1990s, and I've read a couple of references to it later where, and in fact, you know, Oliver Stone really goes over this in his Untold History miniseries as well, how, you know, really, the only reason they used the nukes was just basically to impress the Russians, and that it really wasn't, they knew they were going to let the emperor stay. They knew that they didn't even really want an unconditional surrender, but they wanted to basically keep the Russians from actually having the opportunity to fulfill their promise and really enter the war, and make any further gains in China or, you know, in actually on Japanese territory. But then also they just wanted to prove to Stalin, we got these things now, and now you're going to have to do what we want. And there was even this great article at Counterpunch the other day where, I think we're running this on antiwar.com as well, either today or tomorrow or something, where she talks about how Truman, once he got word that we have the bomb at Potsdam conference, that's when he started walking around and strutting his stuff and sticking his chest out and acting with, you know, more contempt towards Stalin and deciding that really we don't have to compromise. They had the compromise that they would just, as long as they kept extreme right-wing parties out of the governments in Eastern Europe, that would be okay. But then Truman decided that wasn't good enough and started pushing the issue, and all that did was cause the reaction from Stalin that he said, that's it then. All Eastern Europe have to have completely communist governments owned and controlled by me forever. If we're not going to have a gray area here, it's going to be a red area. And so They're strutting around. They're trying to prove what tough guys they are to the Soviet Union and how now we're going to get our way, when, of course, all they're doing is building themselves up into a place where then they're provoking the kind of reaction that is exactly what they did not want.
Yeah, the unintended consequences of government intervention immediately. And Truman being the accidental president, too. If I remember correctly, he didn't know about the Manhattan Project and the bombs until FDR was dead in the ground, good. And, you know, right. He was now the emperor. And so he, you know, decided, okay, well, yeah, I will strut around. I have the power. And so it all became political decisions. And he, again, was very, you know, he was aware of what he was doing. He was aware of the amount of people that were going to die and that many of them, most of them, were innocent civilians.
Yeah.
So, you can't climb into his head to figure out exactly what he was thinking, but it seems as if that didn't really faze him at all. He was okay with that.
Yeah. All right, now, so Daniel Ellsberg would be mad if we didn't make sure and stop and make the point of the difference between an A-bomb and an H-bomb and the fact that the Nagasaki bomb, the implosion plutonium bomb, is the kind of bomb that they now use as the blasting cap for an H-bomb, a hydrogen fusion bomb that oftentimes measure in the tens of megatons. And even if they're in kilotons, they're in high tens of kilotons, but they're H-bombs so they can be miniaturized so they can fit many different warheads on a single missile and that kind of thing. But some of these warheads are thousands and thousands and thousands of times more powerful than what they did, the bombs that they used to kill the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I think most people don't understand that. A-bomb, H-bomb, Q-bomb, I saw that in a movie once, whatever it is. You know, they don't really understand about how that is. But you compare this kind of mushroom cloud to that kind of mushroom cloud, it's the difference between nuking Abilene and nuking Los Angeles.
Yeah, absolutely. The Hiroshima bomb was a uranium bomb, and so when the Nagasaki bomb, the plutonium went off, it made the Hiroshima bomb totally irrelevant. They had now, again, perfected this science to mass murder possibly the entire population of the world, especially nowadays, as you said, with as many of these that are just the blasting caps. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that. If the Nagasaki bomb was that big of an advance over the one that they used in Hiroshima, and those are just the shape charge that we use to set off the modern bombs nowadays. And people, you know, I don't know. I guess we're kind of going around in circles. I'm sorry, but it's just kind of funny to me that if you even think of an anti-nuclear movement, you think of what? Like a couple of nuns breaking into a Army base, an Air Force base, and with a hammer and doing a little protest, or you think of, honestly, man, I think of people with early 1980s haircuts and tie-dye shirts outside protesting, because that's the last time I ever heard of an anti-nuke protest in my life. That's the image in my head, is people who were hippies in the 60s out there, you're still protesting in the early 80s about this. But otherwise, it's an issue that just kind of goes under the radar most of the time.
And I think that might be because, the U.S. government has been in so many wars over the decades that, attention is shifted. Most likely they won't be using nukes. So, okay, we need to talk about drones and occupations and everything else that comes with it. It all seems much more, not necessarily important, but at least a higher priority, because at the moment people are being blown up. But you're absolutely right, though. If a couple of those go off, that's it for all of us. So I think it's important that libertarians especially stand up and say that this is horrific. It is against our principles, and that we should be banding together with the right and left as best we can to call for their abolition. It's
absolutely
a waste of our tax dollars. It's a possible nuclear holocaust. I think those two reasons alone, not necessarily in that order, are very important.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, great article again. Very happy to run it on antiwar.com. I really appreciate your time on the show, Jared.
Hey, really appreciate you and all your work, Scott.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. All right, so that is Jared LaBelle. He is the executive director of Taxpayers United of America. And the article is Mr. Truman, or How I Learned to Start Worrying and Hate the Bomb, running at antiwar.com on Tuesday.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com.